We're speaking today with the Honorable Michael Levitt, advisor to President-elect Donald Trump's healthcare transition team and founder and chairman of Levitt Partners, a consulting company focused in on healthcare policy. Governor Levitt also served as both administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency and secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services under President George W. Bush. A former three-term governor of the state of Utah, Governor Levitt has served as chairman of both the National Governors Association and the Republican Governors Association. Governor Levitt was the lead advisor on Mitt Romney's presidential transition team, having written about the experience in Romney Readiness Project 2012, Retrospectives and Lessons Learned. He earned his business degree from Southern Utah University. Governor Levitt, welcome back to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be with you.
Governor, you've earned quite a reputation as one of the most highly regarded strategists in the healthcare arena, and you also bring a vast amount of expertise from both state governance as well as running several federal agencies within the Bush administration. And now, here we are watching the President-elect Trump's transition team lay the groundwork for the incoming administration, a team you are now lending your advice to. And as you assist the President-elect's team, what are some of the more important decisions that the Trump team needs to make in establishing a successful new vision for health policy in America?
I think it's important to look at the transition not just as a health policy issue, but as a national transition. This is the most important transition of power that occurs literally in the world because of the role the United States plays. There are three basic jobs. The first is to put a team on the field. Obviously, the president-elect has nominated in the health area Congressman Tom Price. The second is then to begin to ready an agenda for the first 100 or 200 days. A fast start is vitally important for any administration. It's important to answer the mandate that it's clear that the people of this country gave the new administration and the new Congress. The third is to begin coordinating closely with Congress so that that agenda can be successful. And then there's a lot of other details that have to be taken care of in terms of how you manage the attention of the world. One example has been the interaction with foreign leaders. The president-elect will be meeting by phone dozens of foreign leaders, and each of them have an agenda, and we've seen that play out in the news.
Well, Governor Levitt, when you were last on with us a few years ago, hard to believe how quickly the time has gone by, you spoke then of the need to recalibrate some aspects of the Affordable Care Act that you thought would make it work more effectively. And your advice to the Romney campaign in 2012 was keep certain aspects of the law in place and repeal some things such as the insurance mandate. So now we have been through a number of years of open enrollments. More than 20 million Americans have gained coverage. The industry and the delivery system really has seemed to recalibrate itself to adapt multiple regulations and directives in the ACA. But still, of course, there is a lot of talk within the incoming administration about ways to repeal and replace the law. How do you feel the incoming administration should proceed on this track, and how do you think repeal works without causing great disruption to the healthcare industry and the delivery system for millions of Americans? What's your thoughts on that?
The one certainty in the next several months about healthcare is that there will be a bill that will pass Congress that will be titled Repeal and Replace. What is uncertain is what they will define repeal to mean and what they will define repair, replace to mean.
Mm-hmm.
Pretending that the law never happened is not an option. It happened. Lots has occurred since that time. But the Republicans have, for three elections in a row, campaigned that they would repeal and replace the law, and I think they have no alternative but to fulfill that, given the mandate for change that occurred in the last election. So I believe there will be a bill that will pass, and there will be parts of the Affordable Care Act that, in fact, can be changed. And I think one area that we'll look quickly to see will be, obviously, the individual mandate. I think that's likely to disappear. Now, the problem that all of this brings is they do have to replace this because there are 20 million people who now have coverage and many other Americans whose health care will be affected by this. So at least the appearance right now is that they will repeal the portions that they believe can be replaced, and they'll give themselves some time. Some people say 2, other people say 3 years in which to actually formulate the replacement. One of the commitments that Republicans have made is that they don't intend to do this in a way that does not involve a bipartisan support. And I think that's important. One of the primary mistakes that was made in the passage of the Affordable Care Act is that it was done entirely on a partisan basis. And they seem committed not to make that mistake again.
Well, that's a great observation. And we've had David Gergen on the show, and who's also said one of the failings of the Affordable Care Act, that it did not have that bipartisan support. So that's a great observation. And I wonder if we could take a moment to look at the person President-elect has chosen to run the Department of Health and Human Services. Representative Tom Price is an orthopedic surgeon from Georgia, a conservative Republican congressman, has been leading proponent of repealing the health law and limiting expansion of Medicaid. And I'm wondering, you know, you're one of 22 secretaries of HHS and the former HEW, so you have a cat's bird seat of what it takes to run that office, the influences that you have, and all the people who are vying for your attention. What general advice do you have for incoming Secretary Price on how to prepare for this challenge and ensuring the integrity of the population health and the healthcare industry in this country?
The Department of Health and Human Services is a large department. It includes 27 different units, and they're big, and they're spread out. The Centers for Disease Control, Medicare, Medicaid, all of the welfare programs, a big portion of the Homeland Security portfolio, the Food and Drug Administration. All of these are large branded organizations who are roughly and generally categorized in the health area and the human service area, but there are 80,000 employees and a $1 trillion budget. So this is not just about the Affordable Care Act. There's a very substantial portfolio of other responsibilities, and one of the things I would offer him in terms of advice is recognize that there will be many other components of the job other than just repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act. The president-elect has chosen a very able man to run the department. Tom Price is a physician. He understands the policy, and he understands the granularity of the law from a very intimate standpoint, that of a practicing physician. He will use that, I'm sure, very much to his advantage. One of the second pieces of advice would be to recognize that there are lots of perspectives, and part of the duty and the responsibility of the secretary is not just to drive your own views, but to understand the views of a broad consensus of people when possible, and to move forward. Sometimes you have to go slower in order to go fast, and because there's so much potential disagreement. And we've seen that actually play out in the Affordable Care Act. Here we are 6 years later, essentially starting over again. And it's because they insisted on going fast. If they'd gone a little slower and obtained bipartisan support, it's unlikely, in my judgment, that we would still be debating this.
Well, Governor Leavitt, we rightly so, I think, are very focused right now on the coverage issue. But I'm always mindful of just how much delivery system transformation was called for as well under the Affordable Care Act. And some of those forces had been in play. I know you've been engaged in a great view of the transformations that were happening in healthcare around the country. And they're really about meeting the increased demand for primary care, for care that was better coordinated, care that delivered better outcomes more safely, hopefully with some cost effectiveness as well. And as part of all that, we saw a growing number of accountable care organizations, growing number of organizations that earned the designation of patient-centered medical homes, and certainly a big expansion in federally qualified health centers, their sites, and the people they serve, and, of course, hospitals as well. And all these forces in many communities join together to improve care coordination and patient outcomes. What do you think these organizations should be thinking about as they prepare for changes under the Trump administration? Do you see all this transformation going forward in different directions? What's your view on that?
The most important change that has occurred in healthcare potentially over the last 60 years is the transition from fee-for-service payment to some type of payment where providers are paid on the basis of value. All of the things you named are really driven by the payment system. The question is, will this transition from fee-for-service to value payment continue under the new administration? And I think the answer to that is yes, it will. It will because the change is not being driven simply by political ideology. It's being driven by an economic imperative that if we want to continue to have great health care, we have to change the way it's paid for, because there's no way we can continue to spend an increasing share of the American economy on one thing, health care, and continue to be an economic leader in the world. So the alternative to this is just to continue to drive down unit payments or fee-for-service payments until they get lower and lower and lower, and ultimately those affect quality. So the only thing to do and the smart thing to do is to change the way we pay for it. And I believe that the Trump administration will not only agree with that, but they may in fact hasten it.
We're speaking today with the Honorable Michael Levitt, founder and chairman of Levitt Partners, a consulting company focused in on healthcare policy, one of the health industry advisors to the Trump transition team, former three-term governor of the state of Utah. Governor Levitt also served as both administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency and secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services under President George W. Bush. You know, Governor, I want to sort of go back to, you've said it a couple of times, that we've just had this incredible divide in our country in terms of trying to figure out a pathway to provide needed care to the underserved and uninsured in this country, and trying to find that seam of cooperation. And you wrote a book, Finding Allies, Building Alliances, Eight Elements That Bring and Keep People Together. I think that should be required reading.
I agree.
It is such a great book. Just sort of thoughts about how, in this highly charged partisan world, we're going to make sure that we have a bipartisan solution moving forward. Some tips, thoughts, observations.
We, I think, have to acknowledge that Washington, that government, has moved over time into a much more partisan process that's driven by the fundamental belief that the other party won't do the right thing, and therefore we have to wait until we have power, and then we will do the right thing. And then when power changes, the roles just reverse, and people just start making the same our same arguments are made, but just by the opposite side. And another thing we can count on is that people who gain power typically overreach, and that's one of the things that leads to another shift in power. So I think the key here is to recognize that the big danger is overreach. That is to say, we've got this appetite now because we haven't had power to do everything exactly the way we want it done. But again, it goes back to the phrase I used earlier, that sometimes you have to go slower in order to go faster. I believe the Republican Party has a very impressive and historic opportunity to put in place a governing structure that will last for a long time if they have the discipline not to overreach and to find a solution that can be lasting. What drives this kind of thinking is what I refer to as common pain. That is to say, you have to have enough at risk that everyone is willing to sit down and to talk and to give up some things that they'd like to have, but they just can't and have it sustainable. I think one of the risks that is being weighed right now is, how do you get that? Do you do it by not passing anything, or do you do it by passing a repeal and then working on a bipartisan basis to overcome the common pain? I think there's a good case that can be made that that might happen. I don't think there'll be any bipartisanship on the repeal, but I think there may be a substantial amount of bipartisanship, at least an opportunity for bipartisanship on the replace.
Well, Governor, that's a very pragmatic and hopeful approach to how those discussions will move forward. And I wonder if I might ask about one area, obviously, that's of great interest to us, and that I think falls into the category of something that traditionally has enjoyed bipartisan support, and that is the community health centers in the United States. And when you describe that very broad reach of HHS, certainly one of the programs that HHS is ultimately responsible for is the nation's system of community health centers that serves about 24 million people. And over these last years, I think this probably would have happened with or without the Affordable Care Act, the drive to transformation in the health centers has really accelerated. Certainly the advancement of interdisciplinary care, team-based care, outcomes-focused care, training of our clinical workforce with the advent of the teaching health centers and training primary care physicians and the programs to train primary care nurse practitioners and the like. So as we move into this new administration, do you think that that's one of those areas where there may be bipartisan agreement that this is an area to continue to focus and expand upon? And how do you educate all the new members of Congress about these models that, you know, really we're not hearing a lot about during this period of intense focus on coverage and possible repeal and replace? Any observations on that for our listeners?
I served as Secretary of Health during a Republican administration, and President Bush made very clear that one of the top priorities he had in health was to expand and improve the community health center system. And each year we received additional resources, and it was I was under very direct orders to not only expand the number, but to improve the funding. And we actually either dramatically increased funding to nearly 4,000 of them, but we added 1,400. And I tell you that only to not to take credit in any way. I think what we're saying here is that there is bipartisan support for community health centers. And they play a very important part of not just the safety net, but in the new system of primary care where people need to have access to it, they've become a part of the foundation of primary care. So I think there's reason to be not just optimistic, but to be quite optimistic about the future of community health centers in this new payment system. Now, it's going to require that community health centers themselves learn to adapt and to be part of the larger network, not just the safety net, as some people think them. That means new skills, means new ways of doing things, and reaching out and becoming part of the broader community.
Well, Governor, you've done so much in that particular arena when you were in Washington, but you also served three terms as governor of the state of Utah. And, you know, we always think about states as incubators for changes, and you were certainly someone who brought a number of notable innovations about population health. And you've seen what happens when a state population gains access, the Medicaid expansions that have happened, the great expansion in terms of that you work with on the Part D for the Medicare expansion as well. And now we have some Representative Ryan contemplating perhaps a new way to sort of envision how Medicare works. What do you see the positives and negatives surrounding both the proposals around expansion of Medicaid, the perhaps privatization of Medicare. How should governors and state legislators be thinking about their work in health planning and policy with all this transition going on?
Well, we find, I think, the country in a peculiar situation now because we have, I think, 33 states that have expanded Medicaid, and you have 18 that have not, which means that you have federal funding going to 33 and 18 that aren't, and that's not a circumstance that's really consistent with mm-hmm. the long-term objective of Medicaid. I think what we'll see is we'll see some changes, mostly giving states more flexibility and working. We may also see some of the in addition to the flexibility, we may actually see less funding in certain of the optional populations, where states will have the ability to use funding more flexibly, but it may mean that in certain populations there may be some flexibility on what the benefits are. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see how that unfolds, but I don't think there's any lack of commitment to taking good care and helping those who are in hardship.
Well, Governor Leavitt, one thing I think we can be pretty sure of, regardless of what happens with the health care law, is that 21st century health care is undergoing and is going to continue to undergo dramatic transformation with new technologies and biomedical advances, genomics, personalized medicine, really helping us transform what we can do for our patients. And actually, we recently had Dr. Victor Zhao on the show, the president of the National Academy of Medicine at the National Academies of Science, and he talked about the advisory panel that you and other experts participated in, creating some scientific and biomedical recommendations for the incoming president. So as you focus your lens towards the future of healthcare and healthcare reform, both inside and outside the policy world, what are the trends that you think are going to dominate healthcare transformation in the coming decades?
Well, I think we'll clearly see a change in the way people get paid. The basis away from fee-for-service toward more of value payment. I think we'll see more emphasis on primary care. I think that will reflect in lots of not just the payment structure, but also the way training is done and the way people are encouraged and incentivized. I think we'll also begin to see a pronounced reshaping of the way healthcare providers organize themselves, rather than everyone being a general contractor, if you will. I think we'll begin to see networks of care, and we'll begin to see the insurance system move toward that, where we have more narrowed networks, where people, in exchange for price concessions, people will agree that they will draw their care from a prescribed network. That'll have to be done voluntarily, but I think it will happen. I think we'll begin to see more of the risk for healthcare shifted toward consumers. At the same time, I think we'll see consumers have more deliberate choices. I think those are perhaps some of the more significant pillars of change.
We've been speaking today with the Honorable Michael Leavitt, founder and chairman of Leavitt Partners, a consulting company focused in on healthcare policy and one of the health industry advisors to the President-elect Trump transition team. You can learn more about his work by going to LeavittPartners.com or follow them on Twitter at Leavitt Partners. That's LEAVITT. Governor Leavitt, thank you so much for joining us on Conversations on Healthcare today.
Well, thank you.